Hey everyone, welcome back to the U-Turn podcast. My name's Alex Over and this is a super cool interview actually, and I'm really pleased to be joined by Bradley Gunn-Raver. Bradley was an absolute joy when he came to my place. It was prior to current situation, and the only thing I would say about all of this, I had a bit of a plan with the interviews, what I was looking to do. I briefly did touch on this previously, that I was going to interview people at my place. And obviously what's happened recently, it has slowed it up a lot. I could do the interview via Zoom, but I don't know, I just wanted that kind of face-to-face interaction. I actually wanted to capture it like I have done with these interviews. And so the process in this might be slowed down a little bit, and I might have to just have to assess it. But that's cool. So I've kind of waited to launch this particular one. And it was the same with Ian in the previous interview. Yeah, it's been a funny old time to say the least, and I know that everybody listening to this will have their own experiences of what that's represented. My first thing would be is I hope everyone has been okay to the best of their ability. I know it's very different for everybody as an individual. Yeah, I think this interview is going to be really nice to take on board, because Bradley's really unique in his way. He has literally made a name for himself. He comes from absolutely no musical background, in the sense of, shall I say, he's turned up in an environment with well-established, respected people in the music, dance music industry, alongside some brilliant DJs, and he knows people at first hand. He's danced at some of the biggest events, and he's really well known for his brand image and what he represents. He goes to raves, he's completely sober, he brings some really positive light to how he likes to portray himself. He's very honest about what he does, and yeah, he's a generally really nice guy. And I've thoroughly enjoyed and had a, you know, conversation prior to this, and obviously including the interview, but away from the interview, we've spoke quite a bit. And of course we couldn't fit everything in it. I tend to not do the interviews too long, and also I like to split them down, because I appreciate that people, you know, don't have the most time. There's thousands of podcasts and ways to listen and view things these days, so people's time, I appreciate that if you do listen to the full episode, which I highly recommend. And yeah, read the description. There's a little bit more information about Bradley if you don't actually know him, and all of his social links are in there. And yeah, I'll leave it to Bradley, and I'll see you on the next episode. See you guys. Hi, my name is Alex Over, and welcome to the U-Turn podcast. This is season number two, episode number two as well. And I'm joined today by Bradley Gunn-Raver.
Hello. Hi,
Bradley.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for coming.
It's okay.
Appreciate it. People who don't know who you are, well, there will be a lot of people who do know what you do. Could you sort of outline what it is that you do and what it is, the whole Bradley Gunn-Raver, what it is? And
yeah, so back in like 2015, yeah, I was sort of dancing around at events. I was just generally a bit annoyed that when I was carrying around a bottle of water, that I had to carry it around, because I was doing sober raving, so it's just on water. And I was looking online for like a hydration belt sort of thing, something which goes around your waist, which you just put a water bottle in and forget about it. And then I ended up on this sort of cycling running shop, and because when I buy stuff like with the gas mask, I usually go full in and buy the proper pro version of it. So I just found this like proper hydration belt thing which had shaped bottles and everything, and they went in, and then once I bought those, I was like, What else do I need? Yeah, leggings, they will do. Need some goggles, so I went for steampunk goggles. I've got them in my bag as well. And headband and stuff. And basically, I just had this whole rave suit going on, and also the t-shirt, which has my logo on it. But the logo didn't come until a few months later. And yeah, so I went to events, danced around just for hours on end, and then people would sort of take videos or whatever and put them up on socials, although I wasn't really active on social media at that point, so yeah. I didn't know about this. And then over time, people come up to me and be like, oh yeah, you're that guy on Facebook and stuff. And I'd be like, oh, am I? Who's that guy? And they were like, it's you. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, this is cool. Maybe I should start a page. So I just generally started a page called Brenda Gun Raver because I didn't know what else to call it. It's just my name and Raver on the end.
Right, yeah.
And it all started from there. And then basically over the next few years, it went from just dancing around at events, putting videos on social media, a few people liking it and commenting or whatever, not really heavy until it sort of kicked off like halfway through 2016 when I had that big viral video of those two security guards.
Yeah.
Where I'm in the middle and there's two security guards next to me. And then that went on over the Lad Bible and everything. And then that point just like slingshotted it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, carried on for a bit like that until 2017, where promoters would actually start to get in touch with you and be like, oh, can you come to our event? Can you come to our event? And I was like, yeah, okay. And that was mainly UK-based for a while. And then the foreign ones started coming over and be like, right, we're going to fly you over here. We're going to fly you over there. And just getting more like into it and everything. And then that's when it sort of really started to get big. And I think the biggest year was 2018, was where I did something which was like really cool.
Yeah.
So there's this guy called Ben Turner,
yeah,
who runs the International Music Summit in Ibiza, and that's one of the main conferences in the music industry, mm-hmm, which happens over the year. So it's a bit like Winter Music Conference in Miami, but it's a European version in Ibiza. And I got asked to do a keynote interview at this conference, just about Bradley Gun Raver and the journey and everything. And I was like, wow, this is big. And then I went along, did that, biggest moment of my life, because it gave me a lot of confidence throughout life and other parts of life and everything. And then that slingshotted it again, and it went bigger and better. So I was doing a lot more stuff with Mixmag over that time, like doing stuff in New York with them and flying out to Vietnam for Episode Festival, and it was getting very, very big. And then in like sort of late 2018, just before 2019, like it was getting a bit like, it started to become more than what I started it for.
Yeah.
So like, obviously I did it because of me just naturally wanting to go to events and dance, and I was honest and I was sober and all of this stuff. And then it got to a point where the image was just getting really staged.
Mm.
And I felt like when I was going to events, like one of the main points of going to an event was, right, let's just get the perfect 1 minute video and we'll upload it. And a lot of it would be, I get to an event and I'm stressed out because I need to get a good video.
Mm.
And then once I do the video, a lot of what would go through my mind was being like, right, that's done, let's forget about it, throw it in the pocket, and then I'd have a good time. And yeah. I was like,
so the point kind of.
And I was like, wait, I've just only had a good time after I did the video. And then, yeah, and then I was also getting a bit more into advertising and everything.
Yeah.
A lot more bigger companies, and yeah, it just felt a bit not like
originally what it was about.
It wasn't organic anymore.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same as when it started. And the thing which I was thinking about it for a while, like, can it carry on like this? And I kind of predict that in the future it's going to get to the point where it's got too much and I'm going to get overly annoyed with it and just have a bad time and stop it in a bad way.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, let's stop it before that happens, because I'm still kind of having a good time, but I want to stop it before I get to the point where I really hate it.
When was the point that you remembered, though? When was it that you went, oh, do you know what? This isn't, I need to kind of...
Yeah, so there was a big... I was thinking about it for quite a few months.
Yeah.
It was just in the back of my head every time.
Mm.
And then I went to Vietnam for Episode Festival and I had the best time ever. And I was like, oh no, I can't stop this. It's the best thing ever. And I had to tell myself the whole time I was out there. I was like, look, enjoy this, but remember, not every weekend is in Vietnam. And
is that when you were dancing in the sea?
Yeah. I also did the dance, wasn't it? Yeah, that was good fun. Yeah, he texted me at like 5 a.m, being like, "Yeah, where are you up? Are you up?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm up," because he was like 2 doors down. He was like in a different hotel, but like 2-minute walk down the road.
Yeah,
and then we decided to both go raving at 5 a.m. together, and then as the sun came up, I was like, "Shall we go on the beach and do a dance next to the sea?" And he was like, "Yeah, okay." And then that's when we did that. And then like a month later, after all that fun had stopped, I remember I took a flight out to an event not too far away. It's like, you know, around Amsterdam, that sort of area, so about an hour flight away, not too serious. And I remember I took a flight out Saturday morning, just generally booked a hotel, and then flight back Sunday morning, Sunday lunchtime. And the rave was like, obviously Saturday night. And I arrived at the hotel Saturday, sort of afternoon, chilled in the hotel, just like on my laptop doing my programming stuff, and then waited for the rave to start. And I was like, right, I'll go down there now. And then I went to this event, and I remember I was very much in a mood where I just couldn't get into it. And also, I was very worried about getting a video for this event.
Mm.
And I was stood there for about an hour. And after an hour, I said, I'm not going to do a video because I feel like it's putting too much on my mind.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm here. If I put a video up saying I'm having such a good time when I'm really not, then I'm lying to everyone.
Yeah.
And that one of the main things about why people followed me and everything was because it was very honest and everything.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of pure happiness which came out of it. And I was like, it's not there anymore. So, and also I cut the night short. I was only there for 2 hours before I just decided I'm going to just go home. So like, I just went back to the hotel, slept it off, and then I went back the next day. And as I got back home the next day, I was just flown to another country, went to an event for 2 hours, didn't have a good time, and then flew back. And I said, "Yeah, I think I've over. I've like it's overcooked now. It a it's now bit. The time yeah. to call it."
Yeah.
So that's when I sort of did the whole, yeah, I'm gonna step away and everything for a while, and yeah, and then basically over the next like 9 months, I very much focused on trying to get back into like. Trying to get back in touch with life.
Yeah.
Because I was doing raving so much, I was not prioritizing other parts of life so much.
Mm.
Like I didn't really see a lot of my friends in my spare time. I'd always be at events and I didn't go and see my family that much because I was always at events.
Yeah.
And it was all events, events, events. So I spent the next 9 months just very much concentrating on, let's just go in, you know, retouch with all my friends.
Yeah.
Just hang out.
This is when you had the break, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was like, when was that? It was the 14th last year, wasn't it?
14th of March.
Oh, right. So it's like, what was it, the 15th?
It was a year ago, yesterday.
Yesterday, cool.
And then basically I just did other things for a while. Like I went down, because my mum lives near Portland in Weymouth, so I went down there and just sailed around in the harbour, so on some boats and stuff. And then just generally chilled out because I wasn't very chilled out with the raving. So I was very much trying to get my mind chilled.
Get recentered almost.
And then get recentered with life. And then obviously back in March when I quit it was very much like, I'm done.
Mm.
But after all of that, back in like December the 23rd, I think it was, or the 22nd, I was asleep. And I remember that time I was trying to do like meditation stuff. I was just generally trying to like learn how to meditate.
How do you find that meditating?
Yeah, it was quite easy. You just can't follow the advice. The advice is bullshit. Basically, it says try and clear your mind. And if you're someone like me who cannot clear your mind, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like I've got too many thoughts going on all the time and my mind's very busy.
Yeah.
So I can't just tell my mind not to think. So I was like, all right, I don't think this is going to work on me. I'll try something else. Instead of trying to think, not to think, if a thought comes into my mind, I'm just going to let it do its thing and ride out. And then just get into a thing where I just let my thoughts just let them all in and let them all do what they want. and just don't influence them at all. Yeah. Just let them do their own thing. And I found that actually doing that, as at the same time as sort of falling asleep, it allowed my mind to just really chill out. And I think I did like sleep meditation, because at 2:33 in the morning, really weird.
Very particular time.
Well, it is particular. But every time I wake up or something, I always look at the clock. And if something happened at that time, like, I'm really good with dates and numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll just associate it with that time that's locked in.
Mm.
So, like, the other day I remember I ate some dodgy food and I had food poisoning, and I only knew that at 2:50, and I had that at 2:58 because that's exactly when it started, when I woke up and I was like, ah, oh, my stomach.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. But I just woke up at 2:33 and sort of was kind of asleep, kind of not, but I had this, like, my mind was just telling me, you are now ready to go raving again. And I just woke up and I was like, yes, I'm definitely going raving again. And it took a while, but I wanted to get to the point where I had my mind genuinely telling me that, not doing it because...
Is that because you allowed it yourself?
Yeah, to come back to that? Just let it do what... Just, you got to give it some time. And then it just said, yeah, you're going back.
Yeah.
So I just immediately got on WhatsApp and just messaged people. And I was like, right, PG's coming back, PG's coming back. And then, over sort of Christmas and New Year's, I went to quite a few events and stuff. I think I went to Awakenings on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
To go, because I'm good friends with them. So yeah. I just went and caught up with them.
Did you say you went to Mixmag as well or something? You were in London or something?
Yeah, I did go there as well. That was a bit more unplanned. I was just generally in London waiting for a mate at King's Cross Station.
Oh, yeah, I remember you saying.
And then, like, he was going to be an extra hour. And I was like, oh, what should I do for an hour? And it just happened to be a Friday on an afternoon. And I was like, I've been to the Mixmag office a few times, and every Friday they have an office party. And I was like, let's do it. And I was like, they're guest list though. It's a guest list controlled thing.
Yeah.
And so they like to know who's coming before, so they can, they just want, I think it's just generally so they can handle the amount of people coming.
What's going on, yeah.
So I was like, what should I do? And I was like, I still have everyone contacts at Mixmag. So I was like, let's just load up every contact I have who I know works at the London office. So I went text, knowing they're all at work, but at least one of them will see it. And then it'd been like 5 minutes, and my mind's like, I don't know if they've seen it. So I just picked this one guy. I was like, I think it was Lewis. And I just called him. And he goes, hey, Brad, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah.
What's up? And I said, are you guys having an office party? He was like, yeah, it's our first one of the year. And I was like, cool, I happen to be just down the road, like 15 minutes walk away. Do you mind if I come along?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, sure, you're on the list. And I said, oh, and can you have my friend too? Because I'm waiting for him. And he goes, yeah, done. And then basically I text my friend. And I said, right, when you get to King's Cross, we're going to the Mixmag party. And then we just went along. And then I just wanted to catch up with them, really, because they're very good friends and everything. Like, yeah. They're really nice people. So it was as much as getting back into raving, it was also to try and catch up with people, because as much as I spent the last 9 months trying to get back into life and everything, I also hadn't seen a lot of the people from the music industry in a while, so it's sort of just seeing how they were, whatever. And then I haven't been to anything since then, because I was the next no have I I have last week I was at something in Leeds. But a big thing was going to be Ultra next week.
Yeah.
But obviously coronavirus has stopped that. But I'm not too bothered. Like, I didn't lose too much money out of it, because I was quite good with budgeting a very cheap trip to Miami. And now all the flights are cancelled. Hopefully I can get money back on that. But yeah, so now I just sort someone else. Wait for the coronavirus situation to disappear. That's all we can do. There's no point stressing. Just got to wait for it. And then I want it to be over by July, really, because, and hopefully Italy sorts itself out and gets out of their lockdown, because the festival I really like is Capa Future. You know that one in Italy in Turin?
Yeah.
That's a really good festival. So
are you due to go there then?
Well, not currently.
No.
I'm going to wait for the coronavirus situation, but hopefully everything sorts itself out by then, and Italy come out of a lockdown and travel resumes, so then I can go to that. But yeah, we've got to see what happens, really.
Yeah,
can't plan too much right now. if you plan too much right now, you're bound to lose the plans.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? It's just suddenly come across, isn't it, this whole thing.
Mm.
But they reckon, they were saying that the peak's going to be between, what is it, May and June, they were saying, or something. They're estimating, or...
Yeah, I feel like, well, they've said that we're like 4 weeks behind Italy.
Yeah.
But then again, the every country's got different infrastructure and everything. You don't, and they, like... You don't know if it's going to be worse or not as bad or whatever.
Mm.
So you're going to have to find out. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Just got to see what happens.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? What would you say that you would do differently now to what you did before to not get yourself into the situation where you feel like you're in burnout?
Yeah, so...
What would you do?
Well, I'm doing one thing right now, which I'm not doing, which I was before, and that is just generally not going by a calendar so much.
Yeah.
And just generally not... Because when I did it before, I would have at least 3 months of raves in the calendar.
Yeah.
So I had the next 3 months locked in, and it was every single weekend.
Right.
And now I'm doing... Right, we won't go every weekend. I'm only going to go to one, wait a few weeks, maybe another... And just generally a bit more fluid, and also not choose the events based on like just generally just because it's big or whatever. Because that's one thing I got into accidentally, as everyone does, is you accidentally fall into going to the biggest and most commercial events out there.
Yeah, well, that kind of comes with it sometimes, isn't
it? Yeah, and then, but now, like, I do like the big commercial events, I really like them because. Generally, like, their infrastructure is so good.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to, like, I don't know, like, We Are Festival, and, like, there's loads of space, even though it's busy.
Yeah,
and
that's a big thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I
you don't like the cramped environment.
No.
You
like small venues.
But you want space.
But only if they, like, make it so that you can actually dance.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I don't like about really cramped spaces is that you can't really dance in them. And it's not just because people are going to bump into you. I generally don't like causing a problem for other people either. And I don't want to be causing, like, pushing into people or whatever, because I don't like being pushed into myself.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I don't want to, like, push into you guys and make you guys, like, make space for me just because I want to dance and then that makes you can't. That's a bit like, oh... Just because I'm putting more effort into it means that I get more space. I'd rather just everyone be able to dance as they want to without having to quantify the space they need. Just generally have it available to them.
Mm.
And if people want to be really cramped together at the front, then so be it.
Mm.
But also, there's enough space over here if you want to be there all energetic and everything. And that's what I like about the much bigger events is that they generally have that space available.
Yeah.
And also, but to back up the smaller promoters on this is that because the smaller promoters don't have as much money in the bank and they don't have as big as lineups and everything, and they need to make, they need, and it's so hard in the music industry to like break even or make a profit.
Yeah.
So they've got to absolutely fill out their venues.
Make sure that they can.
And they've got to sell all their tickets, and sometimes for them to make it, they've got to overbook their lineup.
Mm.
Basically, get an overqualified lineup, I call it.
Overqualified.
Yeah, it's like going, it's like, yeah, that lineup is overqualified for the event, basically. It's like, yeah, we've got this absolutely massive headliner and everything, but they know they're doing it because they've got to do that to compete with the big guys.
Yeah.
Just to be able to get people in.
Mm.
And then it's like, they've spent so much on this headliner, they've now got to absolutely sell every ticket because they can't put the tickets priced too high because people won't go.
Mm.
So they've got to sell more of them. And then there's the balance as well between, like, right, so this is our legal capacity limit.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't know the ins and outs of every single promoter's logistics on this, but there are always going to be some who sneak a few over just to break even.
Mm.
And that's I think that's the sad part about it, is that, like, it's like, because... It's really, like, the way I see it, right? So, obviously, if you're a promoter stuff, you're not going to see it this way. Maybe you will. Depends how you see it. But as, like, a person on the dance floor, like, there's, like, in Bristol, I think there's been problems in the past at certain venues where the venues got so packed and like someone's fallen over and been trampled on, and they get loads of bad press and all this stuff, and it's like, ah, oh, it was so packed in there, and like people like me on the dance floor like really get annoyed with it because we're just in there and we're like, we've paid to come to a dance event where you can't dance.
Yeah, yeah.
And also to quantify the ticket price, like, although I got guest list a lot, you still have to think on that level of like, all right, the ticket price is 30 quid. Would you pay 30 quid to not be able to do what the event advertises? And the people, like, as much as it also affects promoters with their profits, it also like hurts the dance floor as well. And I think just generally there needs to be a bit more like cooperation in prices throughout the entire industry, all the way up to the top, because it's all like the people who pay for it are the promoters and the people.
Yeah.
Like, I know.
Is it because of the fees of like the artists themselves? Yeah, and the pressures of that?
I don't know exactly how those fees are worked out and if it's just that or other things, because obviously I'm not a promoter, so I don't have those costs.
Yeah, of course.
But obviously, people's fees will go up as they get more popular. And also, if they're charging this amount and then there's someone just as popular charging that amount, they're gonna be like, well, I need that much as well. And it's just like that. And everything rises, but the ticket prices don't rise.
Yeah, of course.
Because they can't. And so everything's going up. That means these tickets get more and more squashed. You get a situation where everyone just generally has a bad time because it's so cramped.
Defeats the whole point of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, which is another reason what put me off a lot of events as well. A lot of the time I would go to these big events and I would never stay for the last set. I would never stay for the big bit where you've got like the headliner and stuff on. If I knew the schedule, which I didn't really look at that much, because I just generally used to flow around and see what was going on.
Yeah, the feeling of it.
But if like the headliner slot, I would genuinely avoid that room altogether, even though I wanted to see that person, because I knew that, yeah, I can listen to their music, but I'll probably have more space to dance around if I watch it on being at TV when I get home than be in that room and just get annoyed because I don't have space to dance. So it's like, no, I'll just go into the second room with all the local DJs and just dance with them because I'm going to have more space. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
What do you think draws people to you and the attraction to what you do and why people want you at their events? Would you say?
I don't really know, mate.
Simple answer.
I would say, obviously, when I was doing my
thing... Is it you as a person, or is it what you bring to the table?
I feel like it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because obviously, I've had lots of feedback over the years.
Yeah.
So when I did my thing, I just did it because I genuinely enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then the demand just followed.
Yeah.
But what I think, yeah, because I'm just generally honest with life.
Yeah.
And I'm quite a positive person. So like,
you bring a good energy.
So. Yeah, lots of energy. I remember when I was dancing around, other people were like, yeah, and they'd dance around too. But also there's that. So there's like, it's really interesting how the demand works. So sometimes the demand is literally because people just like you and they like what you do. But also when it was big on social media, there would also be demand for that as well.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to see, do they want me for that or do they want me for that? And yeah,
you don't want to feel like you're being used.
But also another interesting test I did was that when I stopped it for 9 months, when I came back, I was like, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, I'm not in the spotlight anymore.
But you didn't lose a lot of followers, did you?
No, I didn't.
People who followed you originally as well.
No, I know. I kept most of them.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting was like, right, it's been 9 months. I haven't really been in the music media for a while. So I'm pretty much off the hot list straight away. Like, basically restart. I was like, it'll be interesting to see who still welcomes me, like, basically without that draw of attention which I had.
Yeah.
Because you've lost it. 9 months is a lot of time without media coverage.
Of course, yeah.
So I was like, yeah, it'll be interesting. But actually, what I was very much surprised by was that the amount of, like, people I spoke to were generally happy to hear I was sort of coming back and everything.
Mm.
Without like months of recent media coverage, they were just like being like, yeah, we'll catch up with you and everything, which kind of restored my faith and everything.
Yeah,
because it like it reassured me that there was a lot more honest people around.
And yeah, but you chose to do that as well, so yeah, that was very much in your hands, where you probably felt like you were a little bit out of control before because you were feeling quite unhappy about it.
Yeah, exactly. But now I'm genuinely happy with life.
Yeah.
And then I've also, in that 9 months as well, I also took the opportunity to like upscale my software development career as well.
Yeah.
Because I've been in software development as my main job for like many years now. But when I was doing it alongside my raving, my career didn't really progress. It just stayed where it was. Yeah. And it was fine like that. And
is that because you had the distraction of the Bradley Gun Raver in a way that your actual career was?
Well, I think like...
Not distraction.
A bit like DJing. If you want to be good at DJing, you generally need to practice it at home as well and all this stuff. And because I didn't really do that when I was raving, because I was raving all weekend, I'd only do the software at work and everything and just program at work and write code there. I didn't really do a lot of stuff. And then when I took time off, in the 9 months, I remember, I signed a sponsorship, which paid me a few hundred quid a month. And I was also doing rave reviews for Ministry of Sound as well. Mm-hmm. So every month I'd write a review. I had an editor for that as well.
How did they take it?
Who?
Ministry of Sound.
Oh, no, they understood. They understood. They were very good, actually. And then I also, basically, every month I would basically review every rave I went to.
Yeah.
And I had an editor, because I wasn't very good at writing like descriptive stuff, which made it, like, I wasn't very good at writing media that people would generally find interesting to read. So I basically, from the money that Ministry of Sound gave me for that, I would give half of that to this person
to do it,
to make it nice and interesting. I basically said, right, I'm going to write what I think about them, and I'm going to write everything, and then basically you just take what I've written and make it sure it basically says the same thing, but more interesting to read. Basically just bring it up to like interesting.
Yeah.
And then, so I was basically a few hundred pounds down a month, because obviously all that was, I can't charge them if I'm not doing it.
Mm.
So I just told them, like, I'm going to stop now. It's not happening. And they were like, okay, fine. And then I remember, because that really gave my salary a bit of a top up, so a few hundred more quid a month, which was really good, which allowed me to like do all the flights and stuff, because I didn't get asked to be flown to every festival, and I would sometimes go myself to events and whatever. And then I was basically a few hundred pounds down a month, which I had really got used to that amount of money a month, and I was like, right, I'm now going to have to budget a bit more, because my lifestyle has changed. And so I remember one month I was trying to get used to the lower salary again, and I was like, right, I'm kind of stuck. I need to work out how much money I can spend per day and everything. And I was like, I am in software development, I can do this. Because I was on the bus in the morning, like getting all my bills, working out which ones hadn't come out yet, and then taking the amount which hadn't come out yet off my balance, and then taking that amount and then dividing that amount by how many days there were until payday to give me a rough estimate of how much I can spend per day until there's nothing left at the end of the month. And I'd basically do that every morning. And it was a bit of like 10 minutes to do, because you've got to do the whole process again and again and again.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I can program. Why don't I just write an app which does this? And then I basically searched on the internet about how to get access to banking data and connect to like your bank account and call an API and just program it. And there's this thing called open banking. It's really interesting, because I searched this at the right time. So the previous year, the UK government introduced this thing called open banking. And basically the financial industry is so far behind with tech. Like you go into like a bank and they're all on like these really old operating systems.
Yeah.
And the banks are the only people who have access to that data, and they just don't have any innovation at all. And so because the rest of the tech industry is just going so fast forward, the banking industry is just staying behind.
Why is that?
it's because of all the regulations and everything, they're so scared to change.
Right.
Because of laws and everything, because banking is such a sensitive thing.
Yeah.
To change something, they've got to go through it like with like absolutely whatever.
Massive process,
massive process. And so the UK government's made this thing called open banking.
Yeah.
And generally what they wanted to do is open up the industry to everyone and be like, let other developers get involved, write their own apps and everything, because we need the innovation.
Yeah.
And innovation comes with community.
Yeah.
So
like Apple did with their apps, letting third party people coming in rather than developing it themselves, kind of thing.
Exactly. So I basically found this thing called open banking and I tried to sign up to it, and then I realized it wasn't as open as I thought it was. It was like, oh, you need to be authorized by the FCA to do this. And I was like, oh, well, I'm stuck then.
Yeah.
So I did some more searching and I found this provider which provides an API. And if no one knows what an API is in the programming world, it isn't, what is it again? Application programming interface. And basically it's a way of me as a third party giving an interface to a programmer to interact with so that they can make their application work with your thing. And they were FCA authorized and they said, right, we provide basically the API for all the different banks. You can use this if you're not authorized by the FCA just to develop your thing, so you can generally make stuff and use it. But once you're ready to go out to the public, then you need to go through the whole process.
But you're allowed to use it yourself though.
I'm allowed to use it myself. I just can't let anyone else use it.
Okay.
So for the past year or so, I've just been making this banking app on my phone.
Amazing.
And they emailed me to say like, oh, why are you using this? Do you have FCA permissions and all this stuff? And I just said to them, I said, look, I don't have any of this. I am just making a personal finance app for myself. No one else is going to be using it apart from me. Am I allowed to do this? And if not, what do I need to do? And they were like, yeah, okay, that's fine. As long as you...
It is that.
But they will know if it isn't, because obviously they've got they can see. I've just been making that. And although I can't let anyone else use it at the moment, I can still show people it on my phone, and because they've got test bank accounts which you can log into, so it's all fake data and everything. So I've just been making it. I've been talking to people, being like, oh yeah, if this was on your phone, would you be able to use it? And does this fit you and everything? And you know, I've had really good feedback and everything.
That's good, no?
And I've got like loads of different things of how people use it. I've got a long list of things to do. I think I'm a few months away from completely finishing it.
Wow.
And then it'll be, all right, let's see what kind of deal I have to go with to get it through the FCA. But as like similar to that, I've also been posting about it on LinkedIn and everything.
Mm.
Just like being like, oh yeah, so this is what it looks like now compared to like 5 months ago. And it's come on like this, and this is what I plan to do next. Sort of just giving a sort of project update sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's my main personal project. And then through that, I was able to build up my programming career as well.
Yeah.
So I left my job I was on when I stopped the whole BGR thing and then got another one, which I'm currently at.
So you actually stopped the Bradley Gunray, and also you stopped your actual current job at the time. So you
not at the same time.
Just a little.
I just wanted to get myself up into a more, like, I just wanted to do more and like have a better position in the industry and everything. So I just pushed myself for that, and then basically now I'm at a position now in there where I'm happy where I am. Now I can think about the raving again and then get back into that. So yeah, that's all of that really.
That's really cool. And how have you found the app working for you then, in terms of since developing it, how's it benefited you? I'm just really interested now. I know you're talking about it. Yeah,
so obviously when I first made...
It's a little bit different from what we're...
Yeah. So when I first made it,
I
had an overdraft like most people do.
Yeah.
And I think my overdraft was like 500 quid, but I was always in it.
Yeah.
And so just by developing this app by myself, now... haven't been in that overdraft for like 4 months.
Yeah. Because of the app.
Because of the app.
Yeah.
And I've been able to like save 1.5k. So instead of ending the month at minus 500, I now end the month at 1.5k.
Oh, so it's drastic.
And like I'm saving like 200-300 quid a month.
Mm.
just because of the way the app works. And it doesn't tell you to save money. It makes you aware of how much you're spending and what, if you don't spend as much, if you like, it will say to you right now, this current situation, you can afford to spend this much a day to end up with zero at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't want to have anything at the end of the month, fine, you go and spend that. But if you're just like, well, do I really need to spend that much debt? And you basically have this slider where it's like, let's put it down something more realistic. So like 20 quid or something. And then it goes, wow, you have this much at the end of the month now.
Right,
so it's like, that's interesting. And it's like, it then switches the psychology a little bit. So instead of being like, oh, I need to save 500 quid this month. Instead of doing that, it makes you think about your balance like a business and how much profit you could make that month. So instead of thinking about the effort of putting money away, the reward of keeping money at the end of the month.
Mm. Because you've got to think banking of like a business anyway, like you're saying,
yeah.
In a strange way.
Yeah, I find...
people don't do.
Because saving is so hard, and it's not hard. It's just hard because the way the psychology works around it.
I get that, yeah.
And if you switch it to something different, it's very easy. It's just because the way people think about it is slightly different. It's just thinking about it that way makes it harder.
Mm.
And also, it's not in the bank's interest for you to save money anyway. It's in their interest to keep you in the overdraft
to make money
because they can charge interest on it and everything. Yeah.
Especially a new bank charges for overdrafts that just come in as well. As of yesterday,
what's that?
Some of the banks have like charging as of the 14th, as of yesterday. So if you're HSBC overdraft, they charge like nearly 40%. Like,
yeah, it's silly.
Yeah, huge amount. So yeah, it's really difficult for people. But that sounds like that would really benefit a lot of people because it's a clever...
Yeah. What I'm trying to do though is get it to a point where, because once it gets approved, if it does, I'm not sure if it will.
Mm.
If it does, once it gets approved, it's approved as that.
Yeah.
If I then go, I'm going to change it and everything, you then have to send it back through.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, hang on a minute. You approved this, but now I'm doing that. They need to then look at that as well.
Mm.
Because otherwise it's like pushing through the minimum product and being like, oh, look at this tiny thing. That looks all good. It's safe. And then adding all this dodgy stuff to decide later after they've approved it. They're a bit smarter than that. So once you've got it through that whole approval process, you generally don't change too much.
Mm.
So I'm trying to get absolutely everything I can out the way now.
Yeah.
And to the point where I'm satisfied, I'm completely done with this project. I don't need to touch it again. And then at that point, I'm going to be like, present it and be like, yeah, this is good. And I'm not going to charge for it or anything because I'm not really interested in making money out of it.
Right.
I just generally like...
You're more interested in the fact of what use it's for, in a way.
Yeah. Exactly. And I've enjoyed writing it.
Yeah.
It's helped me. It's helped my career. I don't see why, it's just genuinely a good thing. And the people going to be using it aren't going to be people who are well off. It's not that. It's not an investment thing.
No.
It is
designed to help people.
Use this to get out of your situation.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like charging people who are in a bad financial situation makes sense.
Yeah. Doesn't, yeah. It sounds really good, though. Sounds really good.